Welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy. Was for the video people, speaking to the audio only people on Spotify or whatever. Anyway, hi. This is Chicken Philosophy. I'm your host for today, Edward. I just got back from a 3 weeks vacation, I think. So the last two episodes on Chicken Philosophy, not the last two on the Secret of the Golden Flower playlist. See, I rotate. There's five books, so I run through the five in a particular order, and I run through the three personalities in a particular order, hence the wheel. It makes sense eventually, I think, if you stare at the wheel long enough. Anyway, what am I talking about? Yeah, so Teilhard de Chardin and Martin Luther I ended up doing in Shillong, Meghalaya. And, I recommend checking those out. They're not getting much love. I think because it's me standing in front of a church in the Teilhard de Chardin one with a Coke thing. If you look closely at the Coke thing, it says St. Francis Xavier at the top, which relates to something I'm talking about in the episode. There's like a commentary that runs behind, sort of like the black and white parts of Memento, except instead of black and white, it's a slightly different color. For example, this is what you're seeing right now, that kind of extra vibrancy is because of the HDR being toned down to like 15 or 20%. From the iPhone to the Final Cut Pro, whereas this is much more muted. And when my Final Cut or something updated, these automatic updates happen, and then the vibrancy was gone. And then so I went in and Googled and did some research to find out how to bring it back. And so I brought it back. And so now it's back. Anyway, it's kind of back a little more than it was before. You might hate it. I hope not. The thing is, I kind of dig it. So, you know, this is like extra purple and extra green and stuff happening. Anyway, what's my point? I don't know. I have no idea what my point was. My point is, even though Teilhard de Chardin and all of his, you know, Catholicism, though it might be a little bit more forward-thinking and slightly, instead of being within this box, it's like slightly outside that box and like maybe implying the idea of reaching further. And, you know, a lot of people might not have the patience for that one way or the other. But I recommend it. Check it out. You might enjoy it. And then the Martin Luther. So those were, I was standing out in front of Roman Catholic churches and convents and stuff while reading Teilhard de Chardin. But there was a lot of Presbyterian churches in particular. I learned that there's no R after the Y. I've been saying Presbyterian my whole life, but it's Presbyterian. Tell me you didn't learn something today. Anyway, and of course the British got there first, and so they had this big Anglican Church, which now is part of
the Church of North India,
which is a Protestant Indian church. Anyway, and then the Presbyterian churches are all still there. So anyway, I'm standing out in front of a bunch of Protestant churches, including a radical Reformation Protestant church, the Unitarian Church, for the Martin Luther. Check it out. I'm just giving it a little bit of extra plug because nobody seems to be interested in those, and that's fine. It might be because I took 3 weeks off, and YouTube likes to punish people for taking time off. And they're like, I'm used to you uploading every 2 days. It's been 2 weeks. Fuck you, says the algorithm, right? Anyway, but today, it's part five of The Secret of the Golden Flower. There are 8 pages left of the introduction. And then we will get to the English translation of the Chinese, of the actual text, the 300, 400-year-old Taoist alchemy, Buddhist, Confucius, I Ching mixed text, something about meditation. I don't know. You know as much as I do if you've seen the first four. Okay, so on this program, What I do at the beginning lately is I flip coins to do I Ching, and that's what I'm going to do. But I wanted to correct myself because last time, okay, so when I first started, I used this and I identified this as a Chinese yuan coin, which is correct. And then for the second time I did it, I identified this as 1/100th of a yuan, which is incorrect. This is a jiao, which is 1/10th of a yuan. So 10 of these makes one of these. And 5 of these makes one of these. See? Can you see? I don't know. You see the flowers? There's the flower. That's on all of them. And then the 5. So now you know. Next time you go to China, you'll have some idea what's going on. So yeah, today we're going to flip the 5 jiao. And I as I was looking at my coins, I noticed this, and I was like, hey, wait a minute, that's more, feels more authentically I Ching-y. And so I did some Googling, and I came to find out that this is Japanese, so not very I Ching-y. So we're not going to be using that. And then I started to think, wait a minute, I seem to remember that here in this bag that I received at White Cloud, excuse me, White Cloud Taoist Temple in Shanghai, China, when I was there, which you already know about if you saw part 4 of Secret of the Golden Flower. They gave me this, and inside this, I was hoping there was 2, but there is 1. And again, like, I've never actually like observed a person divining I Ching with coins, so I don't know, maybe it's only done with 1 coin, but I always assumed it was 2 coins. So there's this, which is like some kind of old Chinese coin. It looks like it might be a fen, which I don't know what that is, but I thought there was something, I thought it might be fun. We'll try it. We'll just give it a try. So I'm going to put this coin there. And we're going to end up with the I Ching in up with the coin. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. Maybe this will be a failed experiment. But there it is. So, okay, what is today's I Ching going to be? Well, let's find out, shall we? Shake up the... All right. So, first, that's broken. So the first one is broken. Second is unbroken. Broken, unbroken, okay. And third is unbroken. Mixing it up. Used a dice. Is it being mixed up? Am I? And then unbroken again. So broken followed by 3 unbrokens. And that's on the floor. You're going to pick it up. Sorry, Chinese Lakshmi. Never mind. Okay. Broken. So broken, 3 unbrokens, broken again. And finally, last but not least, broken again. So broken, 3 unbroken, 2 broken. All right, Editor Edward, would you mind playing some music while I look that one up? Mountain 31. Okay, so the figure is called Hsien, H-S-I-E-N, also known as influence, or wooing. I believe that's the English word, wooing. Okay, the short description, an influence comes. Good fortune to those whose hearts are correct. Well, that means good fortune to me and you, because as we both know, you and I are both correct. Unless you find at some point in this video, I say something that makes you realize that you and I are diametrically opposed to each other in our hearts, in which case, then you will know that you are wrong and I am right. No, I'm just kidding. Or am I? Not really, no. But I should be. I really should be. Let's get to the reading, shall we? Let's see if we can finish 8 pages in 20 minutes. Now remember, this is, what's his name? Wilhelm? Writing the introduction. So let's try to finish it. 2. The psychological and cosmological premises of the text. To make the following translation intelligible, it is worthwhile to say a few more words about the foundations of the philosophy on which the method rests. The philosophy is, to a certain extent, the common property of all Chinese philosophical trends. It is built on the premise that the cosmos, and remember this was written in the 30s, so any Chinese philosophical trends you might be thinking of from the past 100 years or so? Before that. We're talking the Republic, not the People's Republic, so think Taiwan. Okay. It is built on the premise that the cosmos and man, in the last analysis, obey the same law. That man is a microcosm and is not separated from the macrocosm by any fixed barriers. So far that sounds a lot like Western perspective, but maybe it will go a different direction unexpectedly. The very same laws rule for the one as for the other, and from the one a way leads to the other. The psyche and the cosmos are to each other like the inner world and the outer world. Therefore, man participates by nature in all cosmic events, and is inwardly as well as outwardly interwoven with them. Okay, I can see how someone 100 years ago, assuming that the Western reader, if asked, what is the relationship between you and the cosmos, they'd say, well, the cosmos is basically nature. And God hath created man in his own image to dominate nature. Where I'm assuming that you and me, I mean, even if we like kind of go, the Elohim created Et Hadam in their own image, and the image of the Elohim created they them. You know, that there's some kind of esoteric truth hidden in there somewhere that we might analyze and kind of integrate and personalize. That even still, it won't contradict these ideas. I'm assuming. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm speaking for myself. I should stick to speaking for myself. Okie dokie. The Tao, then. The way. Governs man just as it does invisible and visible nature. Parentheses heaven and earth, and parentheses for you Westerners to understand. Translating it, making it understandable and intelligible to those who think that the Apostles' Creed is truth and... Alright, never mind. The character for Tao in its original form consists of a head, which probably must be interpreted as beginning, By the way, I want to thank everybody who clicks thumbs up on these Secret of the Golden Flower videos to indicate that you like them. And I especially want to thank that one guy who keeps clicking quite inappropriately that he would like to go down on me because he likes it so much. Or she. I don't know the gender. Keep it up. Up. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. All right. And then the character for going in its dual form, in which it also means track. And underneath, the character for standing still. Right, the way, the going, the track, the road. Okay, we're here. The Tao. The character for standing still, is underneath. So track, standing still. That's interesting. Which is omitted in the latter way of writing. The original meaning then is that of a track, which though fixed itself, leads from a beginning directly to the goal. Taekwon Leap is not a road, a path to a door, but a road leading forever toward the horizon. So what, like an hour? So this is a really old, this is older than me, actually, the reference I'm making. I would have been in the crib when that was on Saturday Night Live. Okay, the fundamental idea is that the Tao, though itself motionless, is the means of all movement and gives it law. Heavenly paths are those along which the constellations move. The path of man is the way along which he must travel. Lao Tzu has used this word, though in the metaphysical sense, as the final world principle, which antedates realization and is not yet divided by the drawing apart of the opposites on which emergence into reality depends. This terminology is presupposed in the present book. Wow, okay. Beginning, going, or track, standing still. Beginning, standing still. Going, standing still. These two in one character is the Tao. That's cool. Traveling without moving. David Lynch. Never mind. All right. In Confucianism, there is a certain difference in terminology. There, the word Tao has an inner world significance and means the right way. On the one hand, the way of heaven. On the other, the way of man. To Confucianism, the final principle of an undivided one is the Tai Chi. The great ridge pole. The supreme ultimate. The term pole, P-O-L-E, not capitalized, so it doesn't mean Polish person, it means pole. Usually, the word pole, the term pole occasionally appears in our text also, and is there identical with Tao. Okay. Out of the Tao and the Tai Chi, there develop the principles of reality. The one pole being the light, or yang, like yin and yang, yin and yang, the yang, right? And the other, the dark, or the shadowy, yin. Dark and shadowy yoga. Mm. Right? Among European scholars, some have turned the first two sexual references for an explanation, but the characters refer to phenomena in nature. Yeah, sex isn't a phenomenon in nature. Yin is shade, therefore the north side of a mountain and the south side of a river. Parentheses, because during the day the position of the sun makes the south side of the river appear dark. End parentheses. Yang, in its original form, indicates flying pennants. P-E-N-N-A-N-T-S, not C-E. And corresponding to the character yin is the south side of a mountain and the north side of a river.
starting only with the meaning of light and dark, the principle when then explains to all polar opposites, expanded to all polar opposites, including the sexual. However, since both yin and yang have their common origin in an undivided one, and are active only in the realm of phenomena, where yang appears as the active principle and conditions, and yin as the passive principle, is derived and conditioned, it is quite clear that a metaphysical dualism is not the basis of these ideas. Less abstract than yin and yang are the concepts of the creative and the receptive, Xian and Kun, I'm sorry about my pronunciation, that originate in the Book of Changes, or I Ching. And are symbolized by heaven and earth. Through the union of heaven and earth, and through the efficacy of the dual primal forces within this field of activity, parentheses governed by the one primal law, the Tao, end parentheses, there develop the, quote within quotes, or whatever, 10,000 things, end quote within quotes. That is, the outer world. Among these things, viewed externally, is also to be found man, in his corporeal appearance, which in all its parts is a small universe. So, according to Confucians, the inner nature of man comes from heaven, or as the Taoists express it, it is a phenomenal form of the Tao. In the phenomenal world, man develops into a multiplicity of individuals in each of whom the central monad is enclosed as the life principle. But immediately, before birth even, at the moment of conception, it separates into the bipolar phenomena of human nature and life, Hsing and Ming. The word for human nature, Hsing, is made up of those for heart and mind, Hsin and what origin, being born, Shen, okay. Heart or mind, Hsin, and origin or being born, Shang, birth of mind, a word for human nature. Born, mind, mind born, mind heart, born, originated. Yes, the heart, according to the Chinese idea, is the seat of emotional consciousness, which is awakened by the five senses through unreflecting reactions to impressions received from the external world, that which remains as a substratum when no feelings are being expressed, but which lingers, so to speak, in a transcendental, superconscious condition. Is human nature, Hsing. Okay. Varying according to the more exact definition of this concept, human nature is either originally good, if looked at from the standpoint of the eternal idea, or is originally evil, or at best neutral. Taken from the standpoint of empirical historical evolution, it can be made into something good only by a long development of the mores. Human nature, as an idea, undoubtedly related to logos, appears closely knit with life when entering the phenomenal world. The character Ming, life, really signifies a royal command, then destiny, fate, the fate allotted to a man. So too, the duration of the lifespan. The measure of vital energy at one's disposal, and thus it comes about that Ming, life, is closely related to Eros. Eros, Logos, okay. I don't know. I don't know if it's necessary to try to cram these concepts into... Well, anyway. Yeah, he's trying to make it more intelligible to the reader in 1930.
Okay.
Both principles are, so to speak, supra-individual. Man as a spiritual being is made human by his nature,
has Singh.
The individual man possesses it, but it extends far beyond the limits of the individual. Life, Ming, is also supra-individual in that man must simply accept his destiny. It does not stem from his conscious will. Confucianism sees in Ming, life, a heaven-made law to which man must adapt. Taoism takes it as the multicolored play of nature which cannot evade the laws of the Tao, but which is yet
pure consciousness, man. I added man. Pure consciousness.
Chinese Buddhism sees it as the working out of karma within the world of illusion.
In other words, Mahayana. I mean, Chinese Buddhism, in other words, Mahayana. Not illusion as in Mahayana. Maya. That'd be Mayayana. The illusion vehicle,
right? To these dualities, there correspond in the corporeal personal man the following bipolar tensions. The body is activated by the interplay of two psychic structures. First, Hun, which, because it belongs to the Yang principle, I have translated as Animu, Animus.
Oh, thanks for translating something we're just now learning about into something very abstract. Thanks for that.
Okay. Hun.
He relates to animu, animus, the animus.
Oh, there's a footnote. Wilhelm's use of the term animus lends the latter a meaning quite different from that given to it by Jung's concept, where the animus is an element in a woman's mind. Jung finds hun close to the meaning of logos, but latter term...
Neither of them know what the fuck they're talking about. Let's move on.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying I know what I'm talking about. I'm just saying they're cramming square pegs into round holes and arguing about which... whether... no, it's a triangle. No, it's a square. No, it's a circle. Come on, guys. It's obviously a circle.
Never mind. I'll just keep reading. No need to waste too much time on that footnote. And secondly, Po? Oh, P apostrophe O. Po. Which belongs to the Yin principle and is rendered here by me as anima. Okay, let's check out the footnote. It is to be noted that Po corresponds only to one part of the anima as conceived by Jung. Okay. So there's Hun and
Oh, and for now, let's just leave the definition blank and let the English translation of the Chinese explain it in context. Perhaps Hun is leaning a little bit masculine, whatever that means, and Po is leaning a little bit feminine. Let's not
get too far into... like the,
because that's kind of the whole... there's a lot of Jung... in the Western translations of Eastern ideas, and like what he did was interesting and useful and insightful, but plugging it in to all of these, like even the translations of words and things like that, he did that with this, the Kundalini Yoga as a book report on the serpent power, which influenced how Western folks see the chakras, Kundalini, and yoga in general. And with this, so yeah, I'm not that concerned with exactly what abstract idea Jung came up with in his dreams. He relates to these old Chinese philosophical terms. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't... okay. It's an interesting curiosity from, like, if this were a study of Carl Jung, but I'm trying to, like, focus more on... keyword being more on...
okay, no. That's not polite anymore, Edward. Get with it. This isn't the 80s no more. Anima... Both ideas come from observation of what takes place at death, and therefore both contain in their written form the sign for demon.
Yeah, of course you would relate it to the soul, the masculine and feminine outward projection in a dream of the soul.
Okay. Demon or daemon,
the Christianized version of the Greek concept of a daemon.
Sorry. That is the departed one.
Oh, a ghost.
Right, whatever. Never mind the English translation. We're just going to read this and, we'll just do our best with it. Take it all with a grain of salt because every word of it is probably wrong. All right. Noted. The anima was thought of as especially linked with the bodily processes. At death, it sinks to the earth and decays. The animus, on the other hand, is the higher soul. After death, it rises in the air, where at first it is still active for a time and then evaporates in ethereal space or flows back into the common reservoir of life.
Right. Yeah. Obviously.
In living men, the two correspond in a certain degree to the cerebral system and the system of the solar plexus, respectively.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's just like, this clearly relates to, you know, the circuit board inside the computer, where this over here relates to the Lemurian astral field matrix. You know, like, oh, yeah, right. One of those is a thing.
Sorry, no.
The solar plexus is a thing. And what am I talking about? Ben Typhira. That's solar plexus. Get your head out of your maternal grandpa's scientific cynicism, Edward. We're reading Secret of the Golden Flower now. That's a dad thing. Switch. Okay. Yes. The animus dwells in the eyes, the anima in the abdomen. The animus is bright and active, the anima is dark and earthbound. The sign for hun, or animus, now that we've established that that's what the English, that's the English word for hun, is animus, is made up of Wilhelm's interpretation of animus, specifically, this guy that we know from translating this.
Okay.
You know, why not?
Is made up of the characters for demon and cloud.
Okay, animus is hun is demon and cloud.
Okay, we'll just think demon cloud. Hun, demon cloud, or ghost cloud. While that for po is composed of the characters for demon and white. White demon and cloud demon.
So White Cloud Temple, where that coin is from, perhaps is actually Hun Temple.
Okay. Is composed of the character... Yes, we just read that. This would indicate ideas similar to what we find appearing elsewhere as shadow soul and body soul. And without a doubt, the Chinese concept is meant to include something like this. Nonetheless, we must be cautious in the matter of derivations, because in the most ancient script, the graph for demon is lacking, and so we may perhaps be dealing with primary, not derived, symbols. In any case, hun, he puts in parentheses. Okay, so every time he says animus, he's saying white cloud. All right. Is the light yang soul, while anima, po,
okay, demon, cloud demon, demon cloud, and white cloud.
White cloud,
po, so po temple, not white cloud. Oh, white cloud. Okay, I had it all fucked up. So Hun is cloud demon. Po is white demon. So if you take the demon out of both of them and stick them together, you get white cloud.
I guess. Okay, this is, yeah. is the dark yin soul, the usual clockwise flowing, that is, the downward flowing process, is the one in which the two souls enter into relations as the intellectual and animal factors. As a rule, it will be the anima, the undiscriminating will, which, goaded by passions, forces the animus, or intellect, into its service. Yeah. What? Yes. Normally. Yes. What? Yes. Sorry. Forces the intellect. So the anima, the undiscriminating will, which, goaded by passions, forces the animus, or intellect, into its service. Okay, I think I get it. I think I get it. Does it say normally? Sorry, that sentence is as a rule.
As a rule. Okay. I mean, that's fair. That I think that's behind things like cognitive bias, where the emotional and passionate desire to be like Luke Skywalker or whatever, to be in alignment with one's religious community, family community, peer group, whatever it is that they've centered themselves in, and to keep things simple, then every piece of data that comes in from the outside world gets filtered and magnetized into a particular direction. And then the intellect gets involved in a limited capacity. That's, as a rule, how people work. That's fucking fair. So passion first, then intellect. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Wonder what intellect would do if unguided by passion. Now thinking about that. All right. Yes.
At least the anima will do this to the extent that the intellect directs itself outward, whereby the energies of both animus and anima, Hun and Po, leak away and life consumes itself. A positive result is the creation of new beings in which life continues.
Ah, we're talking about the sexy time, aren't we? Procreation.
Well, the original being externalizes itself and ultimately is made by things into a thing. The result is death. The anima sinks, the animus rises, and the ego, robbed of its energy, is left behind in a dubious condition.
How does that Wiccan chant go? The fire, like a spark of flame, flying to the heaven, a drop of rain falling to the ocean. The river, she is flowing. No, that's something else, Edward. Okay, we did not finish the introduction today. There are two and a half pages left. Should I make this a little bit of a long one and finish the introduction? Yes. Here we go.
If the ego has acquiesced in the externalization, it follows the downward pull and sinks into the dull misery of death, only poorly nourished by the illusory images of life by which it is still attracted without being able to participate in anything actively. Hells, hungry souls. Don't do that, is my advice. But if the ego has made an effort to strive upward in spite of the process of externalization, it maintains for a time, as long in fact as it is reinforced by the energies expressed in sacrifices by the survivors.
Okay, all right. That's interesting. So once your like relatives or whatever get over it, then you move on. You stick around while they're like... That's interesting. An interesting idea.
A relatively happy life, according to its deserts. In both cases, the personal element retreats and there ensues an involution corresponding to the externalization. The being then becomes an impotent phantom.
The impotent phantom of the opera is there. But not inside of anything. Because...
dun 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 dun. Sing once again for me. Because it lacks the energies of life and its fate comes to an end, and now partakes of the fruits of its good or bad deeds in heavens or hells, which, however, are not external but purely inner states. The more a being penetrates these states...
You see that Rick and Morty where he penetrated a planet?
Oh, never mind. This is just a state.
It's kind of an impotent phantom version of
what he did. Never mind. The more involution progresses till finally he disappears from the plane of existence. Of whatever nature that may have been. And then by entering a new womb, begins a new existence supplied by his previous imaginings. This condition is the state of the demon, the spirit, the departed one, the one who withdraws.
I don't think he understands
eighth grade. Never mind. The Chinese word for this state of being is kuei, often wrongly translated by devil. If, on the other hand, it has been possible during life to set going the backward flowing, rising movement of the life energies, if the energies of the anima are mastered by the animus, then the liberation from external things takes place.
So that's if you get the intellect in charge of the passions. I mean, this is kind of a problematic allegory, you know. Put the man in charge. The problem with most people is the inner woman's in charge, and she's all passion, no intellect. And then the man is like, oh, whatever, honey, okay. And then he applies his intellect. But when a perfect man, if you do it perfectly, then the man's in charge. See what I mean? It's a little iffy. Especially since he's taking this idea of Hun and Po and applying it to these Carl Jung-derived interpretations of anima and animus in order to make it sexist, right?
I don't know. It's amusing. Or maybe. It can be. Then a liberation from external things takes place. If you just say, if the intellect is in charge. Right? they are recognized but not desired. Thus, illusion is robbed of its energy. An inner ascending circulation of the energies takes place. The ego withdraws from its entanglement in the world, and after death remains alive because interiorization has prevented the wasting of the life energies in the outer world. Do that. That'd be my advice. Instead of these being dissipated, they have created within the inner rotation of the monad a life center which is independent of bodily existence. Such an ego is a god. Deus Shen. The character for Shen means to extend. To create. In a word, it is the opposite of Kuei. What was Kuei again? I don't know. Go limp, I guess. Okay. In the oldest Chinese script, it is represented by a double meander pattern, which can also mean thunder, lightning, electrical stimulation. Such a being survives as long as the inner rotation continues.
An inner rotation of an electrical stimulating dildo. Got it. Keep it all in mind, and then it'll make perfect sense.
Okay. Yes, it can, even though invisible, still influence men and inspire them to great thoughts and noble deeds.
Yes.
The saints and sages of ancient times are being like these, who for thousands of years have stimulated
and educated humanity. Education by rotating electrical stimulating. Sorry.
However, there remains one limitation. These beings retain a personal character and are therefore subject to the effects of space and time. Neither are they immortal any more than heaven and earth are eternal. The golden flower alone, which grows out of inner detachment from all entanglement with things, is eternal.
Okay. I mean, I know. I think I know. I grok. But just to be an ass, I'm going to pose a question. If it grows out of this, how can it be eternal if it has a beginning? And I know, I know. It appears to appear because of the way that the person is relating to it. In other words, a sphere can be eternal and have a beginning and an end if it moves through a plane, which begs the question, does the golden flower have an end? I would venture to guess that it can if you lose it. If you gain it through internalization and detachment from the world, then you can lose it by falling in love or whatever causes you to externalize and become fixated on something in the external world. But if it's strong enough, then perhaps it's one of those things like once you know, you can't unknow. Like you have to like really cover your eyes to no longer see what you've seen. I'll just keep reading. Where were we? Yes. A man who reaches this stage transposes his ego. He is no longer limited to the monad, but penetrates the magic circle of the polar duality of all phenomena and returns to the undivided one, the Tao. Herein lies a difference between Buddhism and Taoism. In Buddhism, I know it's Buddhism, but I'm pronouncing it like an American just to annoy you. In Buddhism, this return to nirvana is connected with a complete extinction of the ego, which, like the world, is only illusion. If nirvana may not be explained as death, cessation, still, it is strictly transcendent. In Taoism, on the other hand, the goal is to preserve in a transfigured form the idea of the person, the traces left by experience. That is the light which, with life, returns to itself and which is symbolized in our text by the golden flower.
Gold-colored. As a supplement, we must still add a few words about the use in our text of the 8 trigrams of the Book of Changes, I Ching. The trigram Chen, broken, broken, unbroken. Thunder, the arousing, is life which breaks out of the depths of the earth. It is the beginning of all movement. The trigram sun, unbroken, unbroken, broken, wind, wood, the gentle, characterizes the streaming of the reality energies into the form of the idea. Just as wind pervades all places, so the principle for which sun stands is all penetrating and creates, I wanna be everywhere. I want to be all penetrating. I want to do something that matters.
Nine Inch Nails fans, anybody?
Sorry, realization.
That was the end of the sentence. Okay.
Sorry, I lost track of the sentence. What was the sentence? Just as wind pervades all places, so the principle for which sun stands is all penetrating and creates
realization.
The trigram Li, unbroken, broken, unbroken, sun, fire, the lucid, the clinging, that's an interesting conglomeration of ideas into one, plays a great role in this religion of light. It dwells in the eyes, forms the protecting circle, and brings about rebirth. The trigram Kuun, three brokens, broken, 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 earth, the receptive, is one of the two primal principles, namely the yin principle, which is embodied in the energies of the earth. It is the earth which, as a tilled field, takes up the seed of heaven and gives it form. The trigram tui, broken, unbroken, unbroken, lake, mist. I think we got that one today at one point, didn't we? Yes.
It's the top half of that.
Okay. Lake, mist, the joyous, is a final condition on the yin side and therefore belongs to autumn. The trigram Xian, three unbrokens, heaven, the creative, the strong, is the embodiment of the yang principle which fertilizes Kuun, or Kun, K apostrophe UN, the receptive, the trigram Kaan, K apostrophe AN, broken, unbroken, broken, water, the abysmal, is the opposite of Li, unbroken, broken, unbroken. As already shown in its outer structure, it represents the region of Eros.
I love how he keeps shoving Eros into this.
While Li stands for Logos. Eros and Logos. Li is the sun, Kaan is the moon. The marriage of Kaan and Li is the secret magical process which produces the child, the new man. The trigram Ken, broken, unbroken, I mean, unbroken, broken, broken,
or mountain. Ah. Oh, now the Barbie movie makes sense.
No, sorry. Keeping still is the symbol of meditation, which by keeping eternal things quiescent, gives life to the inner world. Therefore, Ken is the place where death and life meet, where stirb and weird is consummated.
I think he threw in some Nordic there at the end, and I'm not quite that familiar enough with Nordic stuff to get it. I know weird is the origin of our English word weird, and the original ancient Germanic meaning of weird is a little different than weird, but it's kind of fun that they're related. All right, so if you're here, you either left it on and have been doing something else on another screen or something, or you either hate watched it, in which case, thank you, or you enjoyed it, or were maybe it was the best thing on. I remember back in the days where you used to have a radio in your car. Anybody still have a radio in their car? And you'd flip through commercial, commercial, hate that song, commercial, commercial, someone talking, telethon. Ugh, all right, I'll listen to this freaking song again. And then you end up familiar with songs that you kind of hate, but they're quite often the best thing on the radio at the time. Maybe that's the relationship that you and I have. Or maybe you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, do please take a moment out of your busy schedule and like and subscribe, and then I'll know. Or I'll know somebody liked it. Anyway. All right. We're back to normal. Oh, I forgot I had this Chinese hanging scroll with some flowers on it. I was going to hang it here somewhere, but next time. So next time on Chicken Philosophy, in a couple days, if I'm not mistaken, it'll be Gwydion reading the Mechan Revelations. And after that, it'll be Frater BT reading Carl Jung. And you know what happens when Frater BT reads Carl Jung.